The UK's Prime Minister Boris Johnson announces sweeping new restrictions in England to restrict the rise of COVID-19 infections there. More Republican senators in the US say that they will support President Trump in moving ahead with filling the seat at the US Supreme Court, left vacant by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died last Friday. And we'll ask why Taiwan is manoeuvring to curb where motorcyclists can park their bikes. Monocle's editors and correspondents to discuss those stories today here on the Late Edition on Monocle 24. Hello there and a very warm welcome to you to the Late Edition here on Monocle 24 on this Tuesday, the 22nd of September. I'm Thomas Lewis here in Toronto, and joining us today from Verona is Monocle's Europe editor at large, Ed Stocker, and from London, Monocle 24's Daniel Bache. Ed, Daniel, how's the week treating you both so far?
As we were talking about off air, I have a 6-week child at home, so I've actually lost all ability to tell which day of the week it is. What day of the week is it? It's Tuesday, right? Yes.
Tuesday the 22nd of September.
Thanks very much. That's good. You know, it's good to remind me of that, given that I'm about to talk about what's happening in the news. So hopefully it can only be an improvement from here, right, Tom?
Well, let's hope so, Ed. And Daniel, how about you? As much of a bleary-eyed week as Ed is having there in Verona?
Well, I can't claim to be as sleepy or bleary-eyed as Ed. I have no real excuse, Tomas, but I am enjoying soaking up the autumn sun that we've been enjoying here. The last of the summer sun, perhaps we can say. Enjoying a mix of that, working outside and being in the studio.
Well, Daniel, Ed, great to have you both with us on the programme today. Well, let's begin in the UK, where Britain's Prime Minister Boris Johnson has delivered a televised address to the nation in which he announced a set of sweeping new restrictions across England to curb what he's called the UK's second wave of COVID-19 infections. The new restrictions include a return to working from home for office workers where that's possible, an earlier closing time of 10 p.m. for bars and restaurants, and a more widespread requirement to wear masks or face coverings indoors in public places. Here's a brief part of Boris Johnson's comments to Britain's Parliament before that speech to the nation a little earlier today.
Mr. Speaker, we will spare no effort in developing vaccines, treatments, new forms of mass testing. But unless we palpably make progress, we should assume that the restrictions I have announced will remain in place for perhaps 6 months.
Boris Johnson there. Well, the move today comes following an earlier warning this past weekend from the UK's chief scientist that, if allowed to go unchecked, the second wave of the virus in the UK could reach up to 50,000 new infections per day. Lance Price is a former director of communications at No. 10 Downing Street, and he told The Briefing here on Monocle 24 a little earlier today whether the new measures would be enough.
If it doesn't work, in a week or two, there could be further restrictions. And we already know that in some parts of the United Kingdom, in Northern Ireland, for example, that mixing in people's households is not being allowed. So it may well be that other nations within the United Kingdom decide to go further. And that puts even more pressure on Boris Johnson, because he will again be seen to be compromising and not going as far as those who are really serious about knocking the virus on the head are advocating and indeed implementing if they have the power to do so.
Lance Price there speaking to The Briefing a little earlier today. Daniel, Boris Johnson's announcement, as Lance alluded to there, covers England, but Scotland today also announced big new restrictions from this coming Wednesday. And nearly a third of the population of Wales is already under some form of lockdown following the implementation of localised lockdowns in parts of the country there. What's the reaction in the UK been so far to what Boris Johnson has said today?
Yeah, it's an interesting one to see the Prime Minister sort of backtrack on what he said his original position would be in not wanting to have further lockdowns or restrictions. But I think the interesting story today is that sort of mix of science and politics. Obviously, there's been a lot of criticism on Boris Johnson and his government for the lack of clarity around what the restrictions are and what they're going to be. But I think now you'll see a lot more reaction to what's happening. And I would also urge our listeners to go back and listen to The Globalist today, where our regular commentator, Dr. Chris Smith, talked about the fact that there is a need now to try different things and see what that impact is in the short term, in the medium term, because there are some people, Tomas, today saying, well, this was quite obvious. We knew we were going to be in this position when we opened the pubs, when we sent people back to work, when we encouraged them to go out and enjoy the cities and towns. But I think what you'll see a lot more now is an urging from people to try different things and to be reactive to change those when they do or don't work, because this definitely needs to be guided by science. But at the same time, there needs to be some clarity. And as you mentioned, we saw Nicola Sturgeon speak right after the Prime Minister tonight, obviously moving quickly to take control of the situation there, because people will be a little bit nervous about what the local restrictions are. She wants to guide that process.
And Ed, Boris Johnson, from the very beginning of all of this, has received a fair amount of criticism for having been too slow to react to it. Today, Johnson was framing his announcement, it seemed to me, as a way that he was now acting early to stave off the worst effects of the second wave of the coronavirus outbreak in the UK. Listening to what Daniel had to say there, do you think that's how people in the UK will see his moves and his announcements today?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I've always been viewing this from outside, first in the US and then here in Italy. And my personal view is that he hasn't handled this well. What Daniel was saying about communication really just strikes at the heart of where this government seems to have gone wrong. Yes, you can definitely make the case that the government is acting relatively early. And I say relatively early, there is a peak. It seems that there really is a second wave, if not already in the UK, on its way. And so it, at the very least, has acted at the right time. The big question really is whether it's enough. There seems to be a real fear, and it is a difficult juggling game that all governments around the world have had to play. There is a fear of the economic impact. There is the fear of civil liberties. But at the same time, some of these measures just seem utterly bizarre. Again and again, it's like, well, we're going to kind of leave it with you to decide what to do. This is what we think you should do, but we're not going to push you too much. Having, you know, originally not so just a few weeks ago told people they need to go back to work and suggested that, you know, people may be in a position of being, you know, fired for not going back to work if they don't do that. They're now telling people, everyone who can, to work from home. And then odd things like, we're going to close pubs early, an hour early. Now, of course, on top of all of that, they're also going back to table-only service, as opposed to having loads of people standing all bunched together where the spread of the virus would be easy. So that is a good thing. But I do wonder, it's, you know, this morning when I saw the news of what was to come, you know, this news was known before the announcements from Boris Johnson. When I saw that, I did think, what difference does an hour make to a pub closing, you know, an hour earlier? Does that really make much difference to coronavirus being passed on? We'll have to wait and see. If this government's able to be nimble and react accordingly, then maybe it could work. But we've seen in the past with this first wave that it always seemed to be a little step behind.
Well, next here on The Late Edition, it's time to preview Monocle's October issue, which arrives on newsstands this Thursday. In the issue, in the affairs pages, we asked 46 figures in the United States and around the world who represent all parts of the political spectrum there on how the winner of this November's presidential election should go about designing a better America. We spoke to political figures, activists, news anchors, architects, and figures from business and the cultural sectors too, and you will be hearing some of those voices here on The Late Edition in the weeks to come. Today, we hear from Richie Rezada. He is a music producer and an abolitionist organiser in Los Angeles, for whom a total reimagination of the US justice system should be the priority for the next occupant of the White House. It's an area that Richie has personal experience of. He is now 28 years old and spent more than half of his adult life in prison. While there, he launched a series of discussion workshops among his fellow inmates and founded the Question Culture record label, from prison. This is his view now on what reform in the US justice system should look like after Election Day.
I would say that we need to wean ourselves off of our addiction to revenge and domination. Right now, our justice system, our foreign policy, our court system, our corporate policies are all based in the idea that domination is power and that revenge is justice. That if you hurt me, I should hurt you back. And now we're both better off. And that's actually the opposite of the truth.
Richie Reseda there, the founder of the Question Culture record label and justice reform organisation, speaking to us a few weeks ago for the October issue of Monocle magazine. Ed Stocker in Verona, Richie's comments there, they have, I think it's fair to say, a particular kind of potency now following the death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg on Friday and the furious process that is well underway to replace her and potentially change the ideological makeup of the US's highest court for a generation. What do you make of the latest manoeuvres we're seeing from Washington, from Republican senators particularly, who will have a say in whether Donald Trump's nominee, which we're expecting at the end of this week, if that nomination is pushed through?
I know, and today we just found out about Mitt Romney, of course, the former presidential candidate and now the senator for Nevada. There was a lot of rumor that maybe he would, you know, say no to this nomination process going ahead. It now transpires that he will not block it. So it looks like, and obviously we still have to wait and see what happens later this week, it looks like the Senate will have enough votes for this to go ahead, despite the lights of Susan Collins in Maine and Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, the two sort of Republicans that tend to rebel against these sort of things following suit. They, of course, needed more. To answer your question, Tom, it's you know, more of the same, I'd say. I'd say that this is something that's been going on for a while now, and it's not uniquely Republicans. We should make that point very clear. There has been filibuster movements from the Democrats as well. It's just really what US politics has become. One side is in power and it tries to take all the advantages, and then the other side gets into power and the same thing happens. The cycle is repeated. We see this over gerrymandering, the idea of redrawing congressional districts in order to get advantages. US politics has become so like this. It's really this tit-for-tat idea, and this idea of, when does this end? Is this going to be what defines US politics, or is there going to be a change? And I think that's what was being talked about a little earlier in that clip, this idea of there is another way forward. It would take both sides. This is not uniquely a Democratic problem. This is not uniquely a Republican problem. There were times in the past where there was bipartisanship. You know, that sounds like such an alien concept when we're looking at Washington, the swamp politics today. Heading into late 2020, it's hard to imagine that there were times when Republicans and Democrats could come together and find a common ground. That's what's wrong with US politics at the moment. It's a fascinating question. It's something we could debate, I think, probably, Thomas, for hours.
We certainly could, Ed. And it's worth noting, I think, that the city of Louisville in Kentucky has been placed in a state of emergency as the state's attorney general prepares to make an announcement on whether criminal charges will be brought against the police officers involved in the death of Breonna Taylor in March. Taylor's death has become one of the focal points of the Black Lives Matter demonstrations in the US. The announcement hasn't yet been made at the time that we're going to air, but we will have reaction to it for you on tomorrow's news programmes here on Monocle 24. Well, finally, here on The Late Edition, a story for you from today's edition of The Monocle Minute, where we have a report that the government of Taiwan is mulling a proposal to curb where motorbikers can park their cycles. Monocle's Nick Manise had more on the story for us a little earlier today.
I think we're talking Southeast Asia in general. I mean, you know, Thailand, Vietnam, Indonesia. You try and walk anywhere there and you're constantly obstructed by mopeds and motorcycles parked on the footpaths. But what Taiwan has done, and I kind of love that this is a nationwide thing, they're essentially changing their, I guess, their design standards for roads to basically say, hey, you're not going to be able to park your motorcycle here anymore.
Monocle's Nick Manise there. Daniel, we've seen national and city governments tweaking bits of their infrastructure policy in all kinds of ways during the pandemic and the lockdowns that have followed in many places. How long term do you think some of those changes might be, broadly speaking?
I think in many cities, this is an acceleration of what was already happening. Obviously, in London, wonderful infrastructure for cycling, let's say. Other cities, it's a nudge to get them moving in the right direction. Somewhere like Toronto, as you know, Tomas, the debate has been gridlocked really for years on building and bringing in more space for pedestrian shopping, for cycleways, things like that. I think a lot of places will keep that going, and that's great, but it's a matter of getting people involved and demanding that too. And the way to do that is to get people excited and to get out there. For example, here in the UK, we obviously have Cycle Scheme, which gets you a deal on a bike, which will get people out there, because if there isn't the infrastructure, people won't ride, won't try different things as far as commuting or getting around the city. I think it's really interesting, the idea of making wholesale changes, as Nick suggested there, in policy, and making designers and city planners work around that as a solution. That's quite interesting. I mean, I can't imagine restricting space for motorcycles in Southeast Asia, as Nick says. That would be quite interesting. But it opens up the opportunity for people to think a little bit outside the box and around the constraints that they have in cities today. You know, there are not only initiatives to get people out enjoying the city, like the Eat Out to help out here in London, and calls for, you know, outdoor dining and outdoor seating to be made more permanent. But that sort of inspires people, city planners, thinkers, to come up with different ways to be creative and to find more space in the city, because there is space. You just have to find out how to organize that in different ways. And I will point out the one thing that I did notice specifically here in London out of the last lockdown was the introduction of electric scooters on our streets and on the footpaths, on the sidewalks as well. I call it a sidewalk because I'm from North America, of course, but that sort of happened quietly as people got back into the city, and it's already posing a problem, Tomas, and that was a policy decision that was made to allow that to happen, and I think it's going to be one that's quickly reversed, so we'll see. I think cities will try out different things, and it's up to people to sort of get out there and use those things so cities can find out what works best.
And the idea of trying out different things during this moment, how quietly transformative, therefore, as a moment in its own right, do you think that might be for cities who are using the current time to tweak parts of their urban policy?
I would love if those ideas were really allowed to remain and flourish after this is all over, whenever that might be. This idea that mobility is a serious issue, this idea that, you know, the people should have as much right to walk around a city as vehicles, it's really important. And so, you know, restricting motorcycles or motorbikes is one way of doing it. Whether that will work or not, I don't know, because, you know, the cars arguably are the major problem, despite the fact that there are high numbers of motorcycles and motorbikes on the roads in parts of Asia. But let's hope that there are some really positive parts of our city living that will be a part of the fabric of those places for some time to come.
Well, Ed Stocker and Daniel Baich, that is all I'm afraid to say we have time for today's edition of The Late Edition. A big thank you to the two of you, as always, for being with us on the programme today. Our studio manager today in London was Sam Impey. A big thanks, as always, to her too. The Late Edition returns at the same time tomorrow. But do stay with us here at Monocle 24 for more previews of the October issue of Monocle magazine, which arrives on newsstands this coming Thursday. I'm Tomas Lewis here in Toronto. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.